All right, well, today is August 22nd. It's about 8:20, and I'm en route with activist Alicia Cole over to San Jose Federal Court to deal with more of the Ross Camp aftermath, which actually involves, I guess, abandoning part of the lawsuit but continuing another part, perhaps, although it looks like the Ross Camp lawsuit is kind of either moot or dead, or
we need to start over.
And because people have been dispersed, the Ross Camp is gone, but people are still presumably suffering from being outside, being unprotected, having no alternate suitable accommodation. I should ask you, Alicia, what's happening today with this?
Well, today is the day that most likely we are going to get a dismissal on our original lawsuit. What that means is that basically our original lawsuit is somewhat moot because they did close the Ross Camp. So we're going to really diligently allow this chapter to close, but start our next chapter with, how would I say, a lot more attention to detail. And to make sure that we get everything done correctly, there's no bumps in the road. A lot of things happen when you're doing a lawsuit. This is a learning experience for us. And so the next lawsuit's going to be more based on the things that you were just saying, Robert, which is the harm that's come to people now. And not so much about don't close our camp, but what has happened to people now that they're on the streets without adequate shelter.
Let me ask you that. I know you're in your RV, so although you're kind of over on the west side, I don't know how many people are actually on the ground on the west side. There are certainly people in vehicles, and that you're associated with some of them, but the overwhelming majority of people outside are on the ground, right?
They are. On the west side, it's mostly vehicles, but there's a few people. I've seen Malcolm repeatedly get harassed for sleeping over on the west side by, like, Pizzeria Avanti. So there are people that don't have vehicles that are homeless on the west side, but on the west side it's majority of vehicles.
What kind of harassment does Malcolm, whom I'm not familiar with, face?
Well, he gets woken up. He's gotten a couple tickets that I've photographed. He gets told to move along.
What kind of tickets does he get?
He got a trespassing ticket for being over by Pizzeria Avanti. I remember one time he got woken up and was told that it's against the law for him to sleep at the bus stop. And the officer couldn't actually cite the code that said that that's illegal. But he got harassed at the bus stop once. He was woken up, told to move along. It was real early in the morning, too, about 7.
Was the trespass ticket on private property or on public property?
It was on private property, actually, in that case, because Pizzeria Avanti and that parking lot over there, that's private business. That's private property.
And are there postings, or was he told to move by the owner or the owner's agent?
The owner is the one, it was a small little Asian guy, that's the one who called the police. And so he was, I didn't notice if there were any signs that said he couldn't do that. That I didn't notice, but I do know it was the owner that made the police report.
We don't know did Malcolm tell you that the owner asked him to leave?
No. Well, I was across the street actually watching the whole time, so he didn't say that, but I can tell you based on speculation that the owner didn't confront Malcolm. All he did was call the police. He didn't, like, ask Malcolm to leave before calling the police, because I was watching.
Did the police officer ask him to leave before giving him a ticket?
I don't believe so. I believe it was all kind of at one time. It was like, you can't be here, here's your ticket, leave. It wasn't like either or.
Gotcha. Now, I understand that this is a sort of a complex situation, and, you know, going into all the legal niceties may not be terribly enlightening for the audience, but as I understand it, the plaintiffs, who you haven't had much contact with, but who are still the victims, or, well, also the victims of the city, but they're also the people who are suing the city in this lawsuit, are appealing the decision of Judge Davala, the federal judge who felt he believed the stories of the city that there was adequate housing or shelter or whatever you will for the folks who were being evicted from Ross Camp when no such shelter was quite palpably available.
Right. They claim to have given out 116 motel vouchers and spent over $25,000 with Motel Santa Cruz too. But what's funny about that is that doesn't really coincide with the people that I know that were staying at Motel Santa Cruz and the amount of motel vouchers that I saw were given out.
I think you said at one point you were. It was suggested to you by somebody who didn't really want to do the work, me, that someone go and get, you know, figure out, talk to the motel owner and find out how many people actually did stay at the motel, or alternately do a Public Records Act request to find out specifics about city's expenditures on that.
Well, that would be a good start, because I would question whether or not the figure that the city put out and the number of motel vouchers that they say they give out was actually accurate, because it really, from what I saw, you know, on the ground zero, I didn't see that. I didn't see $25,000 being spent on motel vouchers. They also said that a motel voucher or shelter was given to anyone who asked for it, and that's not true. I have declarations from several people that basically were chasing Susie and Megan down that day that the
Susie and Megan being
The city workers, Susie O'Hara and Megan Bunch. Megan is the city worker for homelessness, and there were people that were chasing them around.
Susie is the assistant city manager.
Right. They were begging them for motel vouchers that day. Desiree said, "Hey, Susie, can I please have a motel voucher?" Susie looked right at her, gave her a dirty look, and kept walking.
Desiree Quintero was a lead plaintiff in this lawsuit,
which I think was actually intentional, that Susie didn't give her a motel voucher because she's a plaintiff and she knows her position. But there were multiple people. I know Molly. There was a lady named Molly who cried and who didn't know. She spent that day helping others pack their belongings. She wasn't told. She was never even approached by Megan or Susie and told that she had an option of a motel voucher. There were a lot of people that were just confused. They wanted motel vouchers, but they didn't get one. So for the city workers to, you know, stand in court and promise that everybody would get something if they ask, and then to further say to the city, everybody who asked received, was just a blatant lie.
Yet Judge Davala, who you're going to be speaking to this morning, because you're going in to seek the dismissal of another injunction that is sort of involved in this, but it wasn't the original case where you sued the city, and the Ross Camp plaintiffs sued the city. It was, an attempt to stop the city from the lower court from evicting them. I'm not sure what exactly is the nature of this hearing today.
Well, today it's just going to be our dismissal. What happened is the
dismissal of what?
The dismissal of the lawsuit. The city filed
which lawsuit? There are two lawsuits here.
Well, there's the two lawsuits that are wrapped in this was the injunction and the underlined lawsuit. Both of those are going to be dismissed today. And then separately, there's the appeal. That's in a whole different
the appeal of the same lawsuit.
Right, but that's in the Ninth Circuit, which is in San Francisco. So that's a separate thing, which is also going to probably be dismissed because it's moot at this point.
I see. So, although I thought the attorney who is the counsel for the California Homeless Union, Anthony Prince, said he thought there was a good grounds for challenging Judge Davala's decision that there was...
He originally said that, but then he said something else. I spoke with him last night, and he said that because of the dismissal of the one, he doesn't know that the appeal would be that, you know, that fruitful for us, given what's going on.
Yeah, I think the reason for the appeal of Davala's decision to support the city's eviction of the Ross Camp and destruction of the Ross Camp was based upon the notion that there was, I guess, the three conditions were met. Do you remember what those three conditions were?
For the closure of the Ross Camp?
Right. Either there were three conditions that had to be found for the Ross Camp plaintiffs to succeed in saying keep it open, or there were three conditions that had to be found that allowed them to close it. And I'm not sure which it was as we...
Well, I know for the imminent harm, Anthony was saying that he's won cases previously based on the fact that the closure would cause people imminent harm with even less substance than we showed up with in court. So really, we should have won our TRO hearing on the fact that people would be put in imminent harm if the camp was closed without adequate shelter.
And that's the basis for the appeal in the Ninth Circuit, which is not the subject for today.
Right. Well, and it's also going to be the basis for our next lawsuit, because that harm did happen to people. But the city convinced the court that that wouldn't happen, so we lost our TRO.
Right. So, I guess what today, and by the time this airs, you will have a sense of what's happened in court. I guess we're being assured there's going to be no problem, or likely be no problem, that the case will simply be dismissed, and that'll.
What I'm worried about is attorney's fees.
Right, but we don't know if the city is demanding attorney's fees.
Well, they are, according to Anthony, which is really callous of them to try to get attorney's fees from homeless plaintiffs that have really been given the shaft in this matter. But whether or not the judge will award the attorney's fees is the big question. Anthony says typically not in a case like this.
He's likely to ask the income of all the people in the court to find out if attorney's fees would make any sense.
Well, we at several times now have had fee waivers on file. We're all homeless plaintiffs. We use, which has been kind of an issue as well, we use the homeless services center to get our mail. So, you know, we're all homeless plaintiffs except for the organizational plaintiffs. Everybody is homeless and doesn't have the means to pay Condotti's fees, nor should we, for
Condotti
fighting for our rights.
Condotti is the city attorney?
Yes, right. And Galogli was let go during this process.
Galogli was the assistant city attorney who argued the case in court largely for Condotti.
Who was let go for conduct, so I don't think we should pay a dime.
We'll see if Judge Davala agrees with you.
Yeah, we will.
So, I think one of the original reasons, however, that I began this conversation was to discuss with you some of the concerns you had about, or new information you had about, the what was an enlightened policy, as you were telling me some days earlier. Maybe Angel, one of the Huff members, was, we have two angels in Huff. One is male, one is female. A lot of angels for Huff, but no financial angels, really. Saying that the bathrooms at CVS were accessible now to even people who were non-customers? Is that this understanding?
Yes, for the most part, they were letting people in who weren't customers. But Angel likes to make it a point to go to the restroom after he's purchased something, just to make that not an issue. And yesterday morning, he purchased something, and he held up his receipt, and he said, "May I get the bathroom key?" And the lady said, "Oh, okay, just a minute. It looks like it may have been hidden early," or something like that. And then I guess she found it and then gave it to Angel, but then made a comment like, "Fernando, you know, Fernando's not going to let you guys do this forever." And Angel was like, "What are you talking about? Let us do what?" And she goes, "You know, stay outside. Basically, stay outside in your vehicle and then use the bathroom here." And Angel said, "What do you mean? I'm a customer." He held up his receipt. "I'm just a customer that wants to use the bathroom. What are you talking about?" And she goes, "Well, we're not just going to not allow that forever." And he said, "Well, corporate says that you need to have a bathroom open." And she proceeded to argue with him. And I guess he got upset and said, "Well, we'll see, because that's what corporate says and you're just a register lady." And so he walked out.
He didn't use the bathroom.
He did use the bathroom. But he, I guess Fernando maybe is the owner. I don't know. This manager cited to Fernando. So I don't know if I'm going to have to go now track down Fernando and have a talk with him about, you know, not discriminating against people that need to go to the bathroom.
Now, another issue that came up at the Huff meeting yesterday, which meets every Wednesday, usually around 1 o'clock these days. But in theory, if you show up at 11, you get similar Huffish stuff. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for all you newbies. at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific, with the usual feast of food that shows up, although it's sort of snacks, crackers, fruit, celery and lettuce. Not lettuce. It's crunchy and yummy, and carrots and dip and so forth. But at that Huff meeting, you brought up yourself, Alicia, concerns arising from an incident that happened back in November to you on the when you were in your vehicle and you were harassed by a guy who was drunk, who later turned out to be a business owner nearby, who
his name is Jason Burdick,
who subsequently apologized, but now you've noticed he seems to be posting on which website?
Typically it's his wife, actually. It's Jason was the one who drunkenly attacked my RV in the middle of the night on his way home from the bar over behind Valero on Mission. He screamed, "Get the fuck out, you're not welcome here," threatened to break all my windows if I didn't leave his neighborhood. And subsequently the next day he apologized, said he didn't know there were kids there. But then his wife, it's his wife that is posting.
His wife's name is?
Roxanne Burdick. And she's going on, like, Santa Cruz keeping it real, Santa Cruz looks like shit. She's basically joined.
Those are two websites that you mentioned?
That are the homeless hating groups.
And they're on Facebook pages?
Right. Those are the main, and Santa Mierda, those are the main homeless hating, you know, bigot groups that we have locally. And
so Take Back Santa Cruz is no longer actually active in that regard?
Well, Take Back Santa Cruz as well, but they've been posting more on, I think Take Back Santa Cruz has kind of gotten more careful about what they put on their website, what they allow people to openly talk about on there, because they have been called out. And so the more open...
They actually were a subject to the lawsuit.
Right.
I guess that was dismissed? Or
it was. Well, it's going to be. And then... So they went on there and they kind of censored their website a lot and took a lot of stuff out of there that would be like homeless hate. But
do you have access to their website?
No, I'm not a member of Take Back Santa Cruz. But
but you have information based on people who are members?
There's a group called Take Back Santa Cruz from Take Back Santa Cruz who's managed to get hundreds of screenshots of people saying things that are violent or inciting violent or hate. Violence or hate.
So, getting back to, you say Roxanne is her name?
Yes, Roxanne Burdick.
And what sort of comments have led you to be concerned?
Well, she goes on there and she says, they're just, the things that they're saying about me are just complete fabricated lies. I thought that her husband's apology, you know, she would have just let things go at that point, given the fact that they were in the wrong. But she's gone on there and said, you know, I got to get these people out of town. She's, you know, Alicia Cool is just a horrible person. Somebody should call CPS, should steal her kids away. She's telling everybody that I killed my dog before. Just all kinds of horrible, horrible things. Inciting, you know, threats against me.
Threats such as?
You know, harass me, stalk me, make me feel unwelcome. How are they going to get me out of town? I'm not welcome here. A whole bunch of things about my family. They talk about my children.
Now, has this had any consequence in terms of behavior towards you in your RV, which is usually parked at CVS or on the west side?
Well, not anymore, because they basically successfully bullied me out of their neighborhood. I was parking right behind the garden where I didn't bother anybody. And after he did that, even though I...
The homeless garden?
No, the garden center that's behind Valero on Mission. I was parking right behind the garden, which is down... He lives... This guy, Jason Burdick, lives down the street in a little cul-de-sac in that area. But after he did that, I didn't feel safe parking in that area because he could do that again. Clearly, he's like a middle-of-the-night kind of wanderer, and I sleep at night. So I had the fear that I'd be sleeping, and who knows next time what this guy will do when he's intoxicated. So I left the neighborhood. So no, he hasn't subsequently done anything to me physically, but I think that's only because I avoid him.
Has anyone else, do you think, responded to these threats in any way towards you or other people you've heard, in the sense of a direct connection?
Well, I've heard of like Izzy, for instance. I don't know if you know Izzy, but when I described the incident that happened to me, I've had several other people tell me that a similar looking guy did the same thing to them around like the same area and around the same time frame. So I think that this guy, that it's kind of like his MO. I think he has an alcohol problem. I think he likes the bar that's right there by Safeway. You know
the bar is?
It's like a pub. I don't know. It's right there by the haircutting place. And that used to be like a wing place. Right there by Safeway on Mission. I think that's the bar he likes. And I think he walks home from there. And that several times he's done things to homeless people while he's on his way home. Because I've heard multiple stories on the street of similar things happening from some guy that looks like his description.
What is the description of this guy?
Dark hair, medium height, intoxicated, typically likes to bang. It's the style of which he does it. He typically likes to bang on people's vehicles, yell and scream for them to get the fuck out. Izzy told me, because when I described the incident that happened to me, he said almost the same thing by almost the same looking guy happened to him in the same area. So I feel like this guy is, and this is speculation, maybe one of those nighttime vigilantes that does this on a regular basis.
So your concerns, you raised this issue at the Huff meeting, was to essentially go to the business that you say Jason or Roxanne are running in that area, and picket the business, or encouraging people not to patronize based upon the fact that that they are engaged in anti-homeless activity in their off time.
Right, and that they're not, good, trustworthy members of our community. I mean, the city has no problem pointing out and, you know, punishing other people who aren't good members of the community. I feel like people should know that we have these kind of people profiting off of, you know, your business. I mean, there are a lot of people that wouldn't feel comfortable getting a haircut from somebody that would do such a thing.
Name of the business is?
Stranded Beauty Bar.
And have you approached Jason or Roxanne and requested some sort of specific response from them, such as, I remember Anthony Prince, the attorney, who has been advising us with respect to the Ross Camp lawsuit, when there was a sort of a heightening of hostility toward Ross Camp, encouraged us to talk to the Take Back Santa Cruisers and try to get them to tone down the rhetoric, which I don't know how successful it was, but apparently you said there has been a toning down, perhaps because the lawsuit was then filed against them.
Only on Take Back Santa Cruz, though.
Right. So have you gone to them, or are you considering going to them with a series of concerns, or, if you will, demands?
I sent Roxanne a Facebook message once that said, I thought that you were sorry and that you realized your husband's mistake, and, you know, how dare you then further go and slander me, make up a whole bunch of stories about me. Like, I thought you were actually sorry. I'm requesting that you stop talking about me like that and I saying things that are not true about me. And I threatened to either, I think I said something like, I could picket your business, I could, you know, do a civil lawsuit against you to make you stop saying those things about me. But I haven't done that yet, and that was just kind of a request so that she would stop, but she hasn't.
How long ago was that?
A couple of months.
And if people want to document that this is actually happening, where should they go, and what time period should they try to find these comments?
You can go to Santa Cruz Keeping It Real. You can try to get into the group. Santa Cruz Looks Like Shit, but it's a closed group now that's private, so you can't see its members or its comments unless you can get in.
And during what month? Have there been recent comments in August?
Yeah. I mean, just a few days ago, she was telling everyone that I killed my dog.
Did you kill your dog?
No. I've never killed any dog in my life. Nor have I ever hurt an animal.
And do you have any idea where she gets this story from?
Oh, yeah, because there's some rumors spreading around, because when I was in the process of moving, animal control came and got one of my animal, my dog, from my yard, and under the thought that they thought that I had actually abandoned the dog, but I was just in the process of moving, and I was actually just coming back several times a day in the process of moving, but while I was away from the property, and my dog was still in the yard, they came and got the dog thinking it was abandoned. And so because there's a charge, which I'm fighting of that right now, to try to tell the courts I never abandoned my dog either, she's taken that charge and, like, misconstrued it, twisted it around. Now it's telling everybody I'm a dog murderer.
So the dog is no longer with us?
The dog has been adopted by another family.
So the dog is not dead?
No, the dog was always perfectly healthy. She was actually adopted out in a perfectly healthy condition.
Do you have visitation rights?
No.
So, is this business, what's the name of the business again?
But I should say, I should let people know, I did go, and there's a record of this, on Dog Owners of Santa Cruz. The dog's name is Calypso. And I, even after the dog was confiscated from my yard, because I didn't have the means to do anything about it, I was moving from that property into an RV, as most people know. So I didn't have the means to go and save the dog from the pound, you know, go prove that I'd be this great dog owner while living in an RV. So I just allowed the dog to get adopted. But what I did do was I went on Dog Owners of Santa Cruz and I posted Calypso's picture from the animal control place where she was at and asking people to go and adopt her. I loved that dog.
Indeed. So, where again is this business that the name of it is?
It's in the Seabright area and it's called Stranded Beauty Bar. And from what I understand, it's like top end, really expensive, you know, floofy type of haircuts and
stuff.
Have
you visited the business yourself?
No, I just looked them up online.
Do you know if it's adjacent to a public sidewalk?
I believe it is.
Well, that would give you the option to picket it.
It would.
So,
and I might add that one of the reasons why I feel strongly about picketing is that I lost a day of work. That's another thing. You know, I didn't sue for it. I didn't ask Jason, you know, like extortion. Hey, you owe me for that day of work you made me miss. But the truth of the matter is when he woke me up at 1:30 in the morning that day, I had a job. I was making $15 an hour. I was working at Honey Baked in San Jose. And I missed the next day of work because I spent hours that night up consoling my family, talking to the police. I didn't make it to work the next day. So I feel strongly about the picketing thing because I do feel like it's only fair to have him perhaps not only notify the public, but if he lost a haircut or two, I wouldn't feel that bad considering I, in my very low income status, lost a whole day of work for my family with no compensation over his actions.
So if you might suggest to him, I suppose this thought comes to mind, that if he wanted to compensate you for the day of work lost, that might be a beginning, or perhaps would that be adequate compensation? I mean, you worked an 8-hour day. Is that
right? I made $15 an hour and it was an 8 to 10 hour shift, but I'd be willing to settle for calling it 8.
Okay, so if he were willing to pay you, $120, $130, something like that, that would be, but we wanted to continue to post his views that all the homeless should get out of town, or at least those dirty Ross Camp people or Alicia Cole should leave town. That would satisfy you, or you would need some assurance that
I'd really like a little bit of behavior modification. I mean, I can't control people's free speech, but I feel like inciting hate and violence and, you know, things that would make people feel like doing that is just not a good look for the community. He should refrain from doing that. I don't want to extort him into controlling his speech, though. I mean, I don't know how to, you know.
It's a dilemma for you, it sounds like. What about mediation? Would you be willing to mediate with this guy?
Sure. I mean, I had a whole phone conversation with him. I don't mind talking about these things.
What about the woman who apparently it's her rather than him who's making the comments?
Sure. I mean, yeah, that's true, and I wouldn't mind talking to her either. I don't mind conversations that are uncomfortable to me. I'm starting to get used to it. So even if we don't get along or we go into a room and we automatically know we don't like each other, that doesn't mean I won't have a conversation with you.
Fair enough. Well, I know that this is an issue that it will be coming up again, presumably, at the next tough meeting. You wanted to bring it up at a prior meeting, but that was taken up with a concern with a woman who reported being raped, and that took up all our attention, and also being excluded from the Loudon Nelson Center and therefore denied access to the meal, although the meal itself people who were running that, the senior meal, assured us that they would let her in, and they seemed quite sympathetic when we arrived. But there was a directive that she stay away from Loudon Nelson, though candidly she had also been sleeping there at night on the grass. And I didn't notice it, but some claimed there were concerns about alcohol intoxication. Intoxication, of course, is a fine if you're upper middle class or middle class or pay for your booze or have a private place to go to. But if you don't, then suddenly you're a criminal, even if you have an open container of any kind. It's a clearly discriminatory standard from my perspective. Anything else happening with respect to the California Union of the Homeless? I guess you have a meeting in New York coming up that you are planning to go to?
It's a training. It's supposed to be a 10-day officer training school.
So you're an officer of the California Homeless Union?
I don't know if I am right now or if I would be when I got back. I guess that's a good question for Anthony.
Well, I think you call yourself the president of the local, one of these groups, Santa Cruz County.
I'm the president of our local chapter, which is the Santa Cruz chapter of the California Homeless Union. Just like Wes is the chapter, Wes White is the president of the Salinas chapter. Crystal Rose Sanchez is the president of the Sacramento chapter. We have Brian and Raylene from, I believe, Marysville. We have Robert Aguirre from San Jose. So we all represent our local chapter.
And in the Santa Cruz chapter, other than you, how many members do you have and how often do you meet?
We haven't met now for a couple months just because I'm waiting on some, guidance from Anthony as to making the most out of
Anthony Prince, the lawyer who sort of encouraged
the general counsel for the whole California, the homeless union. I guess the national homeless union. I don't know how far his general counsel role goes, but he's the one that's been guiding and advising us. So I haven't had a meeting in a while. I would say members, soft members or hard members. I think we have at least 5 or 6 really hard dedicated members. We have several people that are in our homeless community that are much harder to get a hold of, but have expressed, wanting to be in the union and take part in speaking up about their rights.
So, what kind of actions is the homeless union either have they done or do you anticipate doing?
All kinds of actions. I mean, right now I'm trying to get educated so that my actions can be really successful. But we're into protests, letters, meetings, organization, putting pressure on the right people.
What specific concerns do you have with respect to Santa Cruz?
Oh, God, where do I begin? We have a lot of our bathrooms are not open right now, specifically Loudon Nelson. The homeless population has a hard time finding a place to use the restroom. We have our showers right now are only mobile, so money is not being allocated where it should be. The showers at the homeless services center need to complete remodel, but for some reason the city hasn't allocated money to make that happen. We just had a meeting with Marcos who leads the Salvation Army.
Marcos Marquez, the Captain Marcos of Salvation Army.
Right, and I have major concerns over how that camp's being ran, the budget, where the money went, where the money hasn't gone. The fact that his next meeting to do anything about it is, up to 3 months away, but he can't actually pinpoint an exact time frame. So the progress that people need to happen right now for survival and for health and safety is just so far away. I mean, that's my biggest concern.
It's been said,
you want to know?
Well, I understand that you remember also of Conscience and Action and Huff, two different groups that I'm a member of as well.
Yes, I am, as well as I am the co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign in Santa Cruz.
And I understand that these two organizations have a plan to stage a protest outside the gate at the 1220 River Street camp, just 61 tents or thereabouts, and is funded till March.
June.
June of next year?
Yeah, their contract, if you remember, Marco said it was funded to June.
Oh, I know I don't, but I believe you. So this is a, what are your concerns about, your main concerns about that camp? And I believe you talked to Captain Marcos, as he calls himself, at the Salvation Army. Quite an amiable fellow, as I felt, but not really willing to give a lot of commitments. I think he gave a few, but not much.
My main, hold on, I'll answer. For 1220, one of my biggest concerns is that they are using the umbrella of safety to, like, take away people's rights. I have a concern that people do have the right to come and go. They have the right to privacy. Like you were saying in our meeting yesterday, that a lot of entities government control uses that control in the form of safety by saying that it's for safety, when really it takes people's rights away. So that's one of my big concerns of, you know, the Salvation Army and how they're running it. Also with best practices, you know, everybody wants to do what they consider best practice. The best practice is not allowing any visitors or not allowing any of this. Why can't we be an example in Santa Cruz to show that we can make a new successful best practice that involves giving people rights and dignity? And also the concern over the slowness of progress that they have at that shelter. They're not addressing the immediate concerns of showers, of, you know, privacy. They're putting it off. He's saying that he's having funding problems as far as getting a couple of refrigerators there. You know, that place should have never been opened without the adequate facilities that people need to live. Could I open it? Would it be okay and appropriate if I opened a giant apartment complex that had no water, no showers, and I just said, okay, everybody move on in? No, because that's illegal. But it was okay for them to do to 61 people at 1220 River. And by the time they iron this out, and we're talking about a contract that's only until June, by the time they iron this out and get people showers and stuff,
June 2020,
they will have been living there without facilities that they need for more time than they will have had them. You see what I mean? Even if he manages in the next, whatever, 3 or 4 months to talk about showers enough to get them, they will have only had them for a couple of months before they close, which will mean most of the time that people live there, they've gone without showers, without laundry, without privacy. That's unacceptable, especially for a monthly budget of what I'm speculating is close to $100,000. And that most of that money is going on staff. And he refused, Marcos, refused and said that it's best practice and it's in the contract for them to have expensive transportation. So they have a shuttle to shuttle people in and out just for control. It's a control thing. So
they do not allow people to walk in and out.
Right. And so they're justifying this ginormous shuttle expense for absolutely no reason. It's ludicrous. Just to have control over people when, you know, if they cut out that expense right there, they could probably have a shower. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
So you will be doing this 1220 River Street protest a week from today, I guess, at 10 o'clock.
Yes, and I might also add that it's not to represent just the people that are living there either. I don't represent, neither does, you know, Huff or Conscience in Action, every person that lives there. What we're doing is, we're saying that what we feel is not okay. And there's only 61 people living at that camp. There's over 2,000 homeless people by the inaccurate count that just came out, but we can only speculate at least 2,000 people in the area. It's a rough count estimate, that point of time census that comes out. So we have about 2,000 homeless people. That camp only has about 60 people. So even if those 60 people are okay with living without water, without showers, and even if they're not okay with the protest, I still feel like we have a responsibility to speak up for what is right and what is not right, and for the rest of the population. You know, I'm not okay with those conditions.
In fact, a member of the camp was at the meeting yesterday and was saying that there was general opposition among the small group that has formed a camp council. In fact, he said everyone he spoke to opposed us doing a protest in front of the camp. I wasn't quite clear as to the reasons.
Well,
I guess it was a low profile.
Well, they said low profile. They're afraid of fear. They said right now they kind of live kind of under the radar there. They're not getting a lot of attention. And they fear if, you know, they get more attention, you know, they could have a, you know, backlash from that. It's fear. Fear is stopping the people there from speaking up for themselves, which is also something I don't think is okay. You know, you should not let fear stop you from speaking about what is right and wrong. And so if those, you know, the people that live there are not okay with doing that, that's fine. I am okay with putting myself out there to speak for what's right and wrong. There are consequences that I face too. I get harassment. I get stalked by people that don't think it's okay for homeless people to have rights. You know, there's a lot of backlash for speaking up. I understand that firsthand.
And you also, I believe, have a protest, I should say Conscience in Action as a protest slated for, Tuesday after next at the Loudoun Nelson to deal with the bathroom.